I'll begin with a little bit of teaching about the instruction, and then more of a guided instruction. So this metaphor of an anchor that keeps us from drifting off in the currents, the waves and the winds of our lives. And I think it might be helpful to consider that the anchor rope is the mental noting, or the clear recognition of what's happening as it's happening. Even if that clear recognition doesn't seem to be a note or a verbal recognition, it's kind of the rope that keeps us connected to the anchor. And what that can do is that it transfers the rope to the anchor rather than having it attached to the driftwood and little rafts and whatever that is floating along the ocean surface. Meaning, oftentimes our attention is tied to our thoughts. And they carry us this way and that way. When we have the attention kind of roped in to the anchor, that can allow the thoughts and other things to drift away. Sooner or later, things will drift away, and they'll drift away a little bit easier if we're not troubled by them or caught up in them or preoccupied with them. And to some degree, and it doesn't always work this way, giving our attention over to the primary home base or object, for example, the rising and falling, is a compassionate and a wise way of leaving the drift wood and different things, leaving it alone so it can drift away, fade away. And in doing so, there is a approach of practice which is try to find a way to really do just one thing at a time with attention. So attention is clearly connecting nicely, fully, directly. And it's not split between different things. We're not on multi-tracking in a sense. Kind of thinking about something else and kind of with the breathing. And the mental noting is one of those ways to support us to really just be, keep everything simple and stay with one thing, or to connect to it clearly. And it can feel for many people who are not used to mental noting that the mind now is getting busier in doing so. It does take a little while to learn to adjust the intensity of the noting so it's quiet and supportive. But I discovered that so often when I thought I didn't need to do the mental noting, that it was just kind of coarse and busy or something, if I was honest and really noticed clearly what was going on, I could be sitting there somewhat comfortable and content, somewhat kind of thinking I was present. And in fact, my mind was kind of off, drifting off in all kinds of thoughts. But I kind of really didn't acknowledge it because I was kind of settled and complacent and more or less, you know, with the present moment and enough. And if I started the mental noting, it actually kept me on track more. It kind of helped me overcome this kind of ways in which I kind of thought I was, you know, kind of present, but I was kind of multi-tracking and not really here. And so it really, then it would help me to stay present and stay present. And I took the mental noting as kind of in the gentle spirit of a loving yes. Yes to whatever was happening. And in fact, occasionally that was my note to whatever I was noticing. Yes. And there's no need to spend a lot of time analyzing or figuring out what the right note is. It helps to have a, you know, appropriate note, but it's not that important. So if it's not obvious what the note should be, a really good default note is something. Something is happening. That's good enough. You're not part of what's happening, you're not sure, and it's fine to be in a state of not sureness. You're not being asked to be different than how you are. It's just something. The note that I came to that was like the one that maybe covered, I don't know if it covered all possibilities, but the one that was the only one that made sense sometimes, was the note chaos. And any attempt to be more precise was just work, which is kind of like probing. And I could just settle back and yeah, it's just chaos now. And this is what it's like. And then maybe it would open up and I'd see more detail. And that would be obvious. But the mental note are kind of like a yes or a loving presence. It's kind of like maybe the wonderful way in a conversation where someone lets you know that they've heard what you said because they kind of repeat it back. Or, you know, have a word that acknowledges. So it's kind of like, oh yeah, in, out, rising, falling, the sound, hearing, an itch. And then another kind of little trap or detour with mental noting is it gets mechanical or it gets kind of a habit rather than a support for clarity. And whether you use the note or not, the idea is to in a loving, kind, easygoing way, but clear way, to try to come into, bring things into focus, whatever it is you're present for, bring into focus so it's kind of stands out in highlight or is clearer. You allow it to reveal itself to you. You allow it to show itself to you more fully what it is. Kind of like maybe tuning a camera lens or opening a dirty window so you can see clearly. and not to be in a hurry. You don't have to know everything that's possibly happening. It's more useful to take a moment to know what is happening with some clarity, fullness. And it's not so important, it's not as important to do this super well. Don't try to do it, 100%. But it's more important that you aim towards continuity of attention. You aim towards just keep showing up and doing it again and again and over again. I think of it a little bit like pushing a scooter with one foot. And so you push and you can coast for a while. And then you have to do it again. And maybe after a while you come to a hill and you don't have to push anymore. You can just coast down. So we bring ourselves back from thinking and return to a moment of clarity and hang in there, stay there. As long as momentum is there to stay, until you need to renew it or give another push and wake up, be there. Be there. So to offer you a little bit of guidance, if this is interesting for you, we start here. You might bring your attention to the area in your head where maybe there's mental activity or thinking or any sense of, if there's any sense of agitation or pressure or tension behind the forehead or between the ears. Anything that feels energized there. And take a few moments to just know it, feel it. Let it come into a clear view. And if there's nothing really that stands out there, go along and just know that vacuum or that whatever is there. And then as you exhale, you might soften, relax the thinking muscle. See if you can soften whatever agitation or pressure or tension that you have in your head, your forehead, underneath your skull. Maybe as if the mind can maybe flatten out, spread outward. Like a wide, still body of water. R- relaxing any effort you might be using to see with your eyes. Or any effort to bear down on your experience. Become aware of the rising and falling of the belly, or the rising and falling of the chest, or whatever your anchor is. Being aware of the physical sensations. Kind of like feeling the touch. And if you feel, wherever you feel your anchor, you might experiment with not making so much effort so you tighten up, so much effort with your mind to be aware. But it's almost as if the what might be called effort to be aware resides in the location where you're sensing, feeling. So that the effort to tune in, get it into focus, to stay continuously for the duration of that effort lives in your belly rising and falling, lives in your chest or nostrils or wherever it might be. It lives there almost as a kind of letting go or relaxing as much as anything else. Yourself to become, have a clear awareness. Might be from welcoming, receiving, rather than going out or going to the sensation. Sometimes it can be helpful, each time you exhale for a while, to lovingly or gently let your thoughts drift off on the currents. Untie the knots that keep you connected to your thoughts. And very gently, persistently, using a mental note, a yes, to this experience, as you might say, rising, falling, one of the ways that my Zen training prepared me for the practice at the Mahasi Center, Mahasi practice, was in the Zen training there was an emphasis on doing one thing at a time. That whatever you were doing, to just do that and be there for that experience. And when I started to do that, I recognized how often I was not doing it. And it was a training to just be with one thing. It can be as simple as something has happened to me, sitting up here ringing this bell at the end of an instructional sitting. I'll look at the clock, realize it's time to ring the bell, pick up the striker, ring the bell, and then the next task is to put the striker back down. And that's all I have to do. And as I was putting it down, I start thinking about the time again, and I want to look at the clock again and see what time it is, and this clock here has a temperature, and I've got to look in, and I haven't finished putting the striker down. I'm quite capable of putting the striker down safely and look at the clock and figure out the time again. It's innocent enough, it's fine enough, but it's not doing just one thing. And there's a qualitatively difference between dividing your attention and not really being there for me with putting the striker down. It is just only doing that until it's done, and then looking at the clock. So to give yourself over to the task at hand, to really be there for that. So if you're walking through the building, to just walk. Like that's the task at hand. And you might notice that there are many times when you are walking, but your attention is split, you're looking at the bulletin board to see if there's a note. And you're still walking. As opposed to walking, you want to look at the bulletin board, so you stop. So you can just look. Not those two things. Or what I see often is people getting tea. I've done this too, get tea. And maybe they put milk in their tea and they have to close the door to the refrigerator, and they do that at the same time they pick up their cup and they, with their hand, swing the door closed. It's fine. If you're in a hurry to do a lot of things, it's efficient. But we're not in a hurry here. So maybe just leave the cup on the counter and just you and the door, the refrigerator door, close it. Then pick up the cup. Some people pick up the cup and they're already sipping as they're walking away. You're doing two things at once. It's no crime. It's fine. And maybe even it's, in some circumstances on retreat, it's actually helpful to kind of just be a little more casual and relaxed that way. So it's fine. Hopefully we're not watching you and concerned about exactly what you're doing, because there's all kinds of ways of being here that are appropriate. But there is this way of practicing that can be supportive at times. And if it is, when it's supportive, really encourage you to really experiment. Just do one thing. Just be there so you can really register. You can really savor or feel or tend to accompany that one thing. And the advantage of that is it allows the attention to get stronger. It allows the attention to kind of get more settled. Allows the attention to wake up and really be clear about this. And that carries over. It's like a little, push on the scooter, kick on the scooter. And then you go do something else and just do that. And retreats is one of the nice places to experiment with this, because much of the time, not a lot of things have to happen. And it's also kind of reinforcing. And doing that as you go about the retreat center, it hopefully is a gentle reinforcement to also do that when we're sitting or walking meditation, to just be with the experience of the moment. Just be with the rising and falling, just be with the steps. Just be not in a restrictive way or a tight way, but maybe in a loving way or in a way that feels actually more open. Just this. And the other thing I want to say is that, that part of the discovery here is the quality of the effort we make to be attentive. And sometimes the way that we're involved in thoughts and emotions and concerns and attachments and desires, there can be a kind of a drivenness or kind of a drive or tightness or that's involved in it. And if that's what we're familiar with, sometimes then when people do mindfulness, they do mindfulness with the same intensity or same tightness or drive or kind of, or there might be some sense of, I'm the one who's doing it and I have to do it right, or it's up to me, or, and so there's a little extra kind of I-ness that's in the effort. And if that's what we're familiar with, then when we start doing the practice, the mindfulness, we bring that along. But that's kind of that sense of tension or pressure, the very thing that we like to relax and let it settle away and kind of soften over time. And so that's why I like to say that it's sometimes better not to do 100% effort, not to use the usual effort, but maybe there's some appropriate way to back off a little bit. And then rather than trying hard to be mindful, see if you can relax or let go into being continuous. Keep it going. Let the scooter keep going. Stay there for a little bit, as long as you have. And everything's just impermanent, so you can't just have continuity forever. So don't be worried. But you have it. You have a little, a scooter push, and then you do it again. And over time, the bearings on the scooter get better and better lubricated, and so your pushes go longer, and you can stay here more. And if you find this, what I'm saying here, interesting, or want to experiment with one thing at a time, and really trying to build continuity without straining, some people find it helpful to maybe lovingly or kindly slowing down when you're here. Just do the different things you're doing slower, like walk through the building slower, lift up the teacup slower, and just use some about to sip, whatever it might be. Again, not to strain or to bear down or something, but there's a way of going slower which is actually a gift to allow the experience to come into fullness. Just this one thing, let it come into fullness. The experience of picking up a cup of tea, the fullness of the arm picking it up, just that. As opposed to, who cares about the arm and what it feels? I pick up the cup of tea so you can keep thinking about something. So it's a gift, fullness of that experience. So if you find it helpful and supportive, all these things I'm saying, this is a great location to experiment. And as I said, there are times in the day that this is more appropriate than other times. You have to kind of navigate and find your way, what's best for you and supportive. But slowing down is one of the classic ways of practicing Mahasi practice. And you might want to experiment with it, one thing at a time. Thank you.